What up, y'all? It's our 11-1st episode of Radio Free Nintendo. 111. Set your clock to whatever time it is at your local area. Anyway, I'm back with the regular crew. This is your host, Jonathan Metz, contributing editor, and we have James Jones, feature editor, Greg Lay, UK correspondent, and John Lindemann, reviews editor, woo, as always, at your service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, they obviously are excited to be here.
Pumped.
As am I.
Absolutely pumped.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I got nothing to hear.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. We have to kick off with a little NFL talk, don't we? That's the
it's customary
tradition
now. Yeah.
There's so much hilarity to bring up this week, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, like the big story, I guess, is, you know, Brett Favre going to the Jets. And one thing that here at, you know, Nintendo World Report we've really been amazed with is the amount of, you know, minute to minute Brett Favre coverage. And so
yeah.
I was just saying today that he actually I heard that, you know, that Brett Favre actually farted. They said that he farted.
This happened. I was quite intrigued to find that he does have bodily functions. It's something that only being traded to a team after 18 years can reveal. You know, that spotlight. Really,
and this is why you listen to Radio Free Nintendo.
I'm sure he farted all the time at Green Bay, but it was like an understanding with his teammates, a long-term contractual agreement that it would not be discussed.
Well, actually, it's a lot of the reason why. I don't know whether you've heard that he did actually have like his own separate shower and stuff at Green Bay, so you know, now we know why.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of his Jets teammates adjust to his farting.
That joke is so juvenile. And
my God.
I'm so ashamed of how funny that I find it. Anyway, we're aiming for not a short show today, but a normal length show, shorter than the past couple. We had some mitigating factors there with extra people and extra features. So we want to get back to a little bit of normalcy this week, and so I've promised James that I'm going to try to do my best to keep this down. So we're going to kick off new business and try to roll on through that. And then we've got a lot of listener mail, not too much, but a lot in the second segment. So, James, actually, I have you on the docket. You're up at bat. You're on deck for new business.
All right. Well, I can edit this part out if necessary, but are we allowed to talk about the Strong Bad game?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It came out today.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Well,
yes.
You know, it's coming out has been kind of a long-standing not truth. But, all right, so we actually got access to the PC version about a week ago. Actually, a week ago.
Yeah,
the day,
a week or two.
The day we're recording this, about a week ago. And I downloaded it and played through it. And even though it wasn't a complete build of the game, it seemed pretty much there. There was maybe one glitch or something. But so I'm pretty confident the game's going to be solid. If you're a fan of the website, or even what they would call themselves, Nintendo terms, lapsed fan, which I suppose you could put me in that category, you'll find the game to be pretty funny. I mean, I haven't been to the site in 2 years, but, you know, I was still enjoying the humor of it. And, you know, there are a good number of quality, and I use that term very loosely, characters in that series they were able to leverage pretty well for the content of the game. And there is some creative use of adventure-style puzzles and inventory mechanic. It's not quite as tedious as some of the more recent Sam and Max adventures, because getting around is a lot easier now. And, you know, it's worth it if you enjoyed the site at some point, but even if you don't go there anymore. Or even if you just enjoy the Sam and Max games and you're just looking for something else to play now that Season 2 of Sam and Max is done. And it's certainly worth a shot. I enjoyed myself very well for it.
How long is the game? I mean, did you play all the way through?
Yeah, I beat it. I think it took me about 5-6 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not bad at all for $10, actually.
No, it's not bad.
I was expecting something shorter than that.
And I could certainly see
because I was thinking, you know, for there are 5 episodes, they're selling them for $10 a piece on WiiWare, and you can't buy the whole season subscription like you can on the PC for, I think on PC it's $35.
Yeah.
for all five episodes. So that's seven each there if you buy them in bulk. And on the WiiWare, there's not that option. So I'm thinking this should be pretty meaty if they're asking you to basically pay $50 for the whole thing.
And I could see myself playing that again at some point. Not right away, you know, a couple months down the road, pull it out again and play it. But the thing that worries me is that while they did keep the simplistic graphics of the series, and they did a pretty good job moving those graphics to 3D, there's a lot of voice in that game, and I'm worried how big it really is on the Wii.
Oh, I heard it was 315 blocks.
Jesus.
Which makes it makes it slightly larger than Cocoteau.
Yeah. No!
Apparently last week's release, Wild West Guns, is 300 blocks as well.
Cocoteau Fishing Master's cultural relevance is now ruined.
Indeed. Yes, we can never speak of it again.
No, we're going to speak of it again because it's funny. But it's I think it was 80 or 90 meg to download. So I mean, it wasn't huge, but it wasn't tiny.
Yeah, it may actually be larger on WiiWare because, you know, I don't know. It could be that the rendering engine or whatever, however they've coded it for Wii, may be different.
Yeah.
It might actually be bigger.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's a similar size. But yeah, it equates out to whatever conversion it is. It comes out to about 315 blocks, I think.
So pretty big.
And, big enough that, well, let's put it this way. You're not going to be able to keep all five episodes on your Wii at the same time.
Oh, God, no. No.
For sure, not.
Yep.
And that seems kind of ridiculous,
yep.
You know? I guess it kind of justifies the episodic nature of the game, and they couldn't have actually let you download the whole thing at once. So it actually is quite convenient that they've broken it up into these pieces that will actually fit on your system.
And, you know, I get the feeling from playing it that I'm going to basically go through all the rest of them, even if I don't get free access to them, because it does sort of feel like the kind of experience I felt through the first of Telltale Sam & Max games, where, you know, they do a pretty good job of leading you to the next one and then teasing what it's going to be, and then you go, damn it, I have to wait a month for that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it could be more than a month.
Well,
I will
play it in
a
month regardless of what system I have to play it on. Let's put it that way.
You know, I'm betting that I know that Telltale tends to work a few episodes ahead anyway, but considering the delay and how long it's taken for them to get the episode started on WiiWare, I bet they pretty much got the whole series finished at this point.
Sam & Max Season 2 was pretty much done when they started releasing them. I think they were working on Episode 4, and they'd already started Episode 5 when they released 1.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, you can put these episodes on your SD card, if you have an SD card. I mean, we assume people do, but, I mean, and they're cheap. But not everybody even has an SD card.
I don't have an SD card, because that's the only device I own that uses SD cards.
Well, yeah, I can guarantee that on even a good connection, because Nintendo servers are slow, downloading 300 blocks takes a while.
Yeah, and transferring stuff to your SD card takes a while, if you remember.
Oh, dude, last night I copied over. I was just kind of, it had been a while since I copied everything over to the SD card. So I went through there, and I had Gyrostar for a WiiWare game that's 290 blocks, and that shit took easily 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I turned on my Xbox and flipped over the TV input, because I didn't feel like sitting there waiting. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I literally made a sandwich and came back, and it still wasn't finished. And so I was like, shit, I'm going to play something else while I wait for this to copy.
Now, do you think that they could actually speed that up? I mean, is that something that they could optimize?
I've heard that it's a hardware restriction because they used a really cheap, flimsy SD port in the system.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, it's a one speed, whereas, you know, instead of a high speed, it's like a low speed.
They had to find the profit margin for the Wii somewhere. You know, all that top line technology in the box. They needed to bump the margin somewhere.
It's terrible. I mean, SD card in general is not really fancy technology, but it's like they even gave us like the shitty version of it.
Well,
it's too bad. I mean, I think that's a big restriction on why more games don't use the SD card, because you kind of, you know, for certain game experiences, the load time is such that it wouldn't really work.
Well, you know, I know what their thought process was when they did this, and it wasn't just let's be cheap. Those high speed SD cards are usually used for things like cameras, where you want to be able to take pictures quickly. Or in some cases, even the solid-state video cameras, where you need to constantly be writing to it. Nintendo was thinking, well, you're not going to be doing these bang, bang, bang hits on it. But they didn't really think of, you could be using this as an external piece of hardware for the game while you're playing it. They just thought of it as like a long-term storage solution.
You know, see the
right.
The thing
and
is,
it is that.
I think what they really ought to do though is they should actually design a game that uses it. But what they could do is while you're waiting for something to either be read off the SD card or copied onto the SD card, they could have party games that you could play with
yes!
your family. While it's doing that, bring in some mini games.
For that matter, they could just load stuff off the card in the background while you're doing other things.
Yeah. Nice,
and I think that's the thing that pisses me off the most on Wii, is that things like downloading games from the shop channel or moving things over the SD card, while you're doing that, you can't do anything else. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason for that. It can't be using that much of the processor power to move things over.
No, but it could be using a lot of the memory
that.
To move it over.
At the very least, they should let you move around the menus and look at other things, you know? Like, it can't take that much. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you go on the 360, you can queue up all kinds of downloads. You can actually download demos or other games while you play another game.
Yeah.
You know, like, it does all that in the background, and it's just not a big deal. And if the game you're playing needs the online connection, it will pause your download and restart it automatically when you finish whatever you're doing. Why can't they do that on the Wii? I mean, what's the big deal? It's just really poorly set up, and now we're complaining about the same shit we complain about every week. So.
Well, see, that's the whole thing. That's, I mean, the more, if you think that the Wii is optimal for what it does, the basically, you haven't played with a 360 or you haven't played with a PS3. It's not that the Wii is bad. It's just that some of the things that it tries to do, it does it so half-assed that once you play on a 360 or a PS3, you're like, what's the deal, Nintendo? Why are you half-assing this so much? You don't have to.
I think it just shows a lot about Nintendo's inexperience with dealing with these kinds of things.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, the Wii is the first system they've had with any kind of front end at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the DS has one, and it's pretty terrible too. Like, you change an option, you have to reboot
the
whole system.
Well, the GameCube kind of had one, but it wasn't always accessed. There was.
Yeah, I mean, the GameCube had this like hidden one, and all you could really do was manage your memory card
and your system
not that
clock.
Big of a deal.
And you can play with that.
Yeah. Well, it's attractive, and the interface for Wii is very attractive.
Yeah.
But it's not that functional. It's not that easy to use. You know, like going through the menus and everything. Is not that bad, but when you actually want to do some work on it, when you actually want to move files around, or it's a pain in the ass.
Well, I know I often use the GameCube memory every time I got a new game to see if the developers put enough effort to actually write a description in there. Mm-hmm. And
well,
you'd be surprised
wow,
how many developers just didn't. Like one game didn't even have the game's name on there. It was just an icon. I'm like, are you serious?
I'm surprised they even bothered to make an icon.
Well,
some of the icons are really interesting. Some of them were like animated and they look.
Well, there
really
has
good.
To be an icon because it's represented on the memory card when you go to memory card manager. Mm-hmm. But I was like, how did this game get out without a name on it? What the hell?
Yeah. The thing is,
well, all right, James, are you playing anything else?
Yes, I am. I have also gotten through, and I'm playing. I'm actually going to talk about on the show for the first time since I bought the game in any serious manner. Ace Combat 6: Skies of Liberation.
God.
No, don't start. You talked about the Watchmen for 20 minutes last week. You have no room to talk, boy.
Oh. Yeah, I talked about it for like
no,
3
dude,
minutes.
No, dude, timed
Man,
it. I timed it.
And it was the only time I will ever talk about
it. Ace Combat
6
is like the new Lords of Thunder. I mean,
seriously.
Timed it.
But it will never
we
be.
We all own Lord that. We all Thunder. Talked about that. It's not the same at all. What are you talking
it's like,
about?
It's better.
Ace Combat 6.
It's just not the same, dude. I can't do it.
It's too long.
I can't do the voice. I can't do the Lords of Thunder voice of Ace Combat 6. Sorry.
That's fine. I don't care. So I've decided that, you know, the game has a lot of unlockables in it. I'm not only going to say some. It's got a ton of them. So I decided that I'm going to go after the ones that you have to get through beating hard mode. Christ, that game is hard. I mean, it's just frustratingly hard. And I guess it's been a long time since I've played a game where the difficulty is just pure frustration. But to put it in perspective, when you're playing the game on normal, there might be 10 allied planes just flying around talking about whatever the hell they're talking about on the radio. You kind of learn to zone it out. But on hard, they're not even doing that. They're like way off on the map somewhere, nowhere near the enemies, and you're being like trying to destroy an entire enemy army. It's like, yeah, get on that. And then they'll end that mission with, yeah, now fly through this 10-foot wide tunnel. Like, gee, thanks. This can't be hard in a fighter jet going Mach 2. And then you crash. Every time. You crash. Constantly. Or, like, you'll get right out, and then you'll get hit by a cruise missile from a SAM just as you come out of the tunnel, and you'll lose. Honestly, it is so hard that any rewards you get for beating it on hard mode, and there are pretty substantial rewards, aren't worth it. because the rewards you get will actually make it so you could have beaten the game in the first place. It's this wonderful irony twist in there. But I'm actually bringing it up because I finally took it online for the first time, and I got just destroyed. I've come to the conclusion that every 360 online game has this dedicated base that plays it 23 and a half hours a day.
Yeah, that's what you find.
And the other half hour is their bathroom time.
Yeah, and, seriously. I mean, and it's like Halo and Call of Duty 4, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
Call of Duty 4 is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's just, I got that. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do good. I'm pretty good at this game, and oh god, I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, okay.
I'm going to reserve my comments because there's something I want to say about this topic in the listener mail.
Oh, okay. So.
But I totally agree.
I haven't read the listener mail, so I won't know. But yeah, it's just ridiculous how good some of these people are, and it sort of makes me think, you know, this could be like the recent situation with Mario Kart Wii, where people have found a way to hack the game so they constantly get blue shells and the bullet bill.
And keep telling you.
Oh yeah, well we haven't talked about that.
Yeah, we haven't.
Keep telling yourself that, James. Sure, that's what it is. Yeah, they must have. Oh, they're all not
cheating.
Doing
this
well.
Isn't fair.
No, I didn't say that's what it.
You stole my kill.
I didn't say that's what's going on. I said this must be what it feels like.
Because
that must be what it feels like. Because
Some context here, apparently some people hacked into Mario Kart, and I guess they're using action replays or something. Mm-hmm. But it was originally intended for the single-player game, but some people tweaked that, and now they're actually going online and literally cheating, breaking the game, and affecting the item distribution online. And it's kind of apparently ruining the game for a lot of people. So we may have a report coming on this on the website
soon, I hope.
They're not
affecting the item distribution. They're giving themselves unlimited blue shells and bullet bills. That's more than affecting it. That's completely raping it.
It's ruining
right.
it. I mean, it'll be
so, yeah,
it'll really be interesting to see how Nintendo reacts to that. I mean, if this
well, they've
is
never
the
dealt with this before,
yeah,
really,
yeah,
in an online game.
I mean,
you've got snaking. People complain about snaking, but it is part of the game.
No,
the game
it's
was
not.
Designed for that to happen,
mm-hmm. or at least
it was designed at the very least, the game's course.
Well, at the very least, the game's design allowed it to happen. You know, whereas
this is
deliberately circumventing the design. It's quite different.
Yeah, I mean,
no, the game's design allowed this to happen too, by allowing those dumbass blue shells to even exist.
Well, yeah, I suppose if you want to assign that level of culpability to it, then fine.
Yeah, but
maybe that will be taken out of the next Mario Kart, like snaking was from the last one.
Yeah,
we can only hope.
That's the thing. I mean, with 360 and PS3, you know, I mean, any time something like this happens, there's a patch released a couple of months down the line, and it gets rid of it.
Well, Nintendo could release.
I somehow don't see that coming from Mario Kart.
Yeah, that's why I'm curious about
it. They've released updates for other games.
I just don't. They could do it. I just don't think they're going to.
I think...
Yeah, they have patched Virtual Console. That's a good point. Mm-hmm, I mean, there is some precedent, I suppose.
I mean, they could easily say release a patch for the game and say you can't play it online unless you have this patch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in order to do that, they'd probably have to release the firmware, though. I mean, update
the firmware. Yeah, just do it like that. Yeah.
Well, we know there...
Because it would have to recognize that you're playing Mario
Well, we know there is an update to the firmware coming. I mean... There's the one that they prepped all the firmware for recently anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Maybe they're going to completely redesign it like Microsoft.
Oh, God. I'm hoping there's a way to avoid getting that redesign because I absolutely hate how it looks.
Yeah, I think it looks bad.
It looks like something that Apple would design, and that in itself, in my eyes, is an insult. Because honestly, they have the ugliest user interfaces I've ever seen.
All right, well, I'm up next, and I've played actually a lot of stuff. I'm not going to bore anybody with more Final Fantasy talk. You didn't get it yet, did you, Greg?
No, I'm going to be, as I'll mention later on, I've got a review game coming in pretty soon, so I'll probably it'll be after that, I would have thought, but it'd be a proceed.
Okay. Yeah, well, I know TYP got it, and I don't know how far he is, but it sounds like he's enjoying it so far. But I finished that, the review's in, I'm just waiting for it to be edited now. And obviously, I really like it and highly recommend it, but I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I played some more Geometry Wars 2, but nothing really to report there. I've seen John's actually going up in the leaderboards a little bit.
Making inroads.
A little bit.
Yeah?
A little bit. I still suck. I mean,
yeah. John, are you friends with Adam Contras?
Probably.
Adam has better scores than me in, I think, every single mode.
That's insane.
And he's actually been motivating, and there a lot of them are close. They're not like five times my score like Justin Davis is. Justin is a games journalist. He used to work at Game Daily and Modojo. I don't know if that site's mm-hmm. still around, but I met him at E3 years ago, and we chat every now and then. And so I added him on live, and his scores are insane. Yeah. 101 million on Pacifism, just like ridiculous shit. Like I will never beat
tell me if this is true or not. And this is the way it seems with that game. It seems that if you can make it past the sort of first part of the game, because of the way you can rack up, like, you know, the 10 times, 20 times, that kind of stuff, it just seems that the longer, like, when you first start out, you really aren't getting many points at all, but if you can just kind of make it past that 1 or 2 minute mark, you're getting massive scores. Like, your scores just extrapolate.
You know, but see, that's the easy part to get past. The because the difficulty ramps up as you go, it's easy to get past the first part. The trick is, every 30 seconds you can stay alive to the tacked on to mm-hmm. the end of the game will pretty much double your score, depending on the mode. The speed that your score goes up changes, but your score will increase dramatically if you can play just a little bit longer, but it's much harder to do that. I mean, the difference between somebody who can play Pacifism for 3 minutes and somebody who can play it for 4 minutes mm-hmm. is huge, because the game is so difficult in that 60 seconds that if you can actually make it through that length of time, you're going to get a much, much higher score, but it also means you're way better at the game. So, I mean, I think it's very well balanced in that sense. Getting past the first 2 minutes of any of the modes mm-hmm. is pretty easy. It's what you do towards the end
is there's kind of like a reward there, in the sense that you're just like, you know what, if I can just last, you know, a little bit longer, I know that I can really
a little bit longer.
So
you'll get a
it works well.
Yeah, and your score will go up dramatically if you just make a small little breakthrough in how you play. But yeah, anyway, my point was that you're starting to catch up on some of my scores, which is exciting, and I now have two friends on my leaderboards who are higher than me in pretty much every mode, so it's given me a lot of motivation to try to do better and see if I can match up. And Adam, I think, is ahead of me in two modes, and he originally said, like, fuck you and your scores in Geometry Wars 2, but obviously he didn't give up and he kept playing, and now he's beaten me in a couple, so we're in a little bit of a race, and that's really where the motivation of playing the game comes out, and it gets really exciting. So I'm happy about that, and I'm eager to go play more and try to get better. But I didn't play that a lot this week. I played quite a bit of Gears of War, which I had on rental from Gamefly, and I kind of knew when I got my 360 that I didn't want to buy Gears of War, because it just doesn't really seem like my kind of game, but I wanted to play it so I would kind of be in the loop. I would kind of, you know, understand all the talk about it and everything. And I think it's a good game. I'm glad I didn't buy it. It's pretty short. Yeah. The single player is pretty short. It's like 6 or 7 hours, and I knew I would be able to beat it in a rental. And
it has a really weak ending, too. The ending is just like, all right. Like, after you beat the last boss.
Well, the ending, I don't know, the ending cinema is okay, but the last boss and the lead-up to it is pretty disappointing. I was fighting the last boss, and I was like, whoa, that's it? Like, that's the ending? I really thought there was probably another chapter at least after it, and there wasn't. So it ends pretty abruptly. But I think there's a lot of cool stuff in the campaign. I mean, the game has this stupid sense of attitude, you know, like, you got the main character with the soul patch, and he talks like he's been drinking whiskey for 20 years, and it just, like, every character, like, good guy and bad guy, has these massive tree trunk legs, and they, like, every single character looks like a linebacker, including the enemies. And the funny thing is, the enemies, they're supposed to be these aliens or some kind of weird monsters that come out of the ground, but they dress exactly like the good guys, and from a distance it's actually kind of hard to tell them apart, because they're shaped the same way and they dress the same way. The only difference is their skin is pale.
Well, it's funny because if you like, I played Unreal Tournament 3 after that, after Gears of War, and if you reverse that, if you would have played Unreal Tournament 3 first and then played Gears of War, you're like, oh, okay, so that's why the game looks like this, and that's why the guys talk that way, and that's why the guys look that way, because all of that is influenced. I mean, it's pretty much Gears of Unreal Tournament, really, like.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I have no interest in UT3. I just don't. It's not the kind of game that I like. But Gears, I mean, it is I consider it as primarily a single-player game just because I wanted to see the story. The story itself is kind of stupid, but it's one of these like roller coaster games like Half-Life 2 where it's very linear and it pretty much guides you on this path and you experience things as you go. Like, the game is shoving events down your throat. You know, there's all these scripted sequences and choke points and things like that. And for that, it's pretty interesting. You know, there's some, like, kind of scary parts, or they're meant to be scary, that I don't really go for because they're more slower paced and they're not that exciting to me. And they're just kind of drag. And I feel the same way about Half-Life 2. There's just, like, all these, like, dark, scary parts that, to me, they feel out of place and they really ruin the pace of the game. But for the most part, it was a fun 6 or 7 hours. I played one match of multiplayer just to see what it's like, and all the guys on my team, it was pretty much their first time playing. Same for the other team, except for one guy on the other team who obviously had played this for 100 hours, and he would get the sniper rifle and kill every single member of our team every round. And by the end of the game, he had something like 36 headshot sniper kills. It's like, come on, like, How does your matching service that
yeah,
bad?
Yeah, how does he get tossed that in you there?
Can, I don't know. Happen. Ask Nintendo.
This guy was clearly out of place.
Yeah,
and this was a ranked match. Like, I think it's supposed to kind of put you with people of your skill level, and this guy blew everybody else out of the water. It was just kind of pointless and stupid.
Well, it's the same thing with COD4. I mean, I'm ranked like 30 because, you know, you can go from pretty much like I think you go up from level 1 to 55, and then you can do that 10 times over. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm first level prestige or whatever, level 40. So I haven't even completed the first like 1 to 55 progression, and I'm getting tossed in there with like 10th level people that are basically level like 550.
And yeah, like, and
how does that even work?
Now, do you get extra experience if you kill them?
No, it's all the same.
Yep.
When you kill them, it's just sheer luck though. I mean, honestly, There are certain levels that seem uniquely designed to people who have played the game a million times and know all the sight lines to kill you from.
Yep.
And, like, sometimes you'll just get lucky and lob a grenade somewhere, and you'll see that you killed someone, like, oh, cool. But usually in those levels, you're just dead before you can even do anything. It's just sad.
Well, I have not played COD4 yet, but it's in my future. I might wait for a price drop, because when the next Call of Duty comes out, maybe I can get 4 for a little bit less.
Yeah, how are you? I'd wait for a price drop on the Game of the Year edition, so you can get all the maps.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. Thanks. The other game I've been playing just for the past couple days is my friend Kevin, who was on the podcast before when we talked about adventure games. He gifted me, totally out of the blue, I didn't expect this at all, but my Wii lit up blue, and I was like, oh, what's this? And he had gifted me Tokitori. I was really excited about it. It's a game I had been thinking about buying, had kind of intended to buy it on a rainy day, you know, or whatever. Just hadn't got around to it yet, so I definitely wanted to play it. And all of a sudden, it's like, holy crap. I mean, that's like kind of a great feeling to open up your Wii and you have a new game there, you know, that somebody's given to you. So, I mean, I would recommend if you know somebody else who has a Wii and you know something that they might like, you know, you should consider that as a gift, because it's pretty exciting when you see the light come on and you go in there and you're like, oh, holy shit, somebody gave me a game that I actually want. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty awesome. So, of course, when I went to the shop channel, it told me that I didn't have enough room to download it, and I had to clean out the fridge, which took about 20 minutes. That was really fun. But anyway, I finally got it downloaded, and it's really fun. It's actually oddly similar to Braid, which I have also played. I'll talk about it later in the show, because somebody wrote an email about it for us. But it's basically a puzzle game. You move around a little bit, but I wouldn't call it a platformer. Your character can't even jump. Like, basically you're moving around and climbing ladders. So it's primarily a puzzle game. And your little character guy, you have to go collect these eggs around the map, and it's all about level design. And the levels are really cleverly designed. And they give you have various little tools. Some of them like build bridges, some of them teleport you across a wall and stuff like that. Some of them are traps for enemies. And basically, you have usually a limited number of uses for each item, and you have exactly enough uses to get you through this puzzle level. So you have to think about it, you have to retry several times until you get things in the right sequence. And it's not really trial and error based. I mean, if you look at the level and really think about it, you could probably figure it out in one go. But it's a little more fun, I think, to just try to brute force it the first time and see what works and see what doesn't, and then zoom out and take a look at the level and say, okay, what do I need to do to get to this point without using that bridge so I can use it later? And it's really clever. I mean, the levels are very good. It's looking like there are only about 40 levels if the pace of the game continues, which means, I mean, I played through 10 levels in 45 minutes today. So I'm not sure how much content there is for $10. Hmm. I'm not sure it's really worth that considering how long the game is, but the quality is very good. The graphics are surprisingly good, actually. I'd heard they kind of sucked, but I think the visuals are very charming, very nice, actually. I really like it so far. I mean, if you like puzzle games...
I was going to say, it actually does sound quite a lot like that, but obviously that had quite a lot of platforming elements in it in terms of jumping. Yeah, but puzzle-wise.
Yeah, it has less platforming than that. But as far as the level design, it basically...
get to an exit.
Yeah, you're trying to collect these things or get from point A to point B, and it's tricky.
Right, yeah.
You're trying to get to the... There's not an exit, but if you think of the last egg as being the exit, it's basically the same thing. It's very clever. It really makes you think, and I'm halfway through the game now, or I think I'm halfway, if it ends when I think it will. And there have been definitely some pretty tricky levels that I had to play several times and really rethink about it in a different way in order to find the solution. And it has a nice thing where you get this wild card, and if you get really stuck on a level, you can use the wild card and skip it. And the thing is, you never get that wild card back until you go back to the level you skipped and solve it. So you get one skip, and then you can reclaim it.
But it can kind of alleviate the frustration of just pounding your head on a brick wall for a time, yeah.
Exactly. It gets you out of
that gumption gap. That's a pretty sensible way to approach it, I think.
You know, as Robert Persig would say. Yeah, it is, and the other crazy thing about the game, and I just saw this today, but before every level it like shows you some tips or it says tells you something about the items that you're going to be using. And I got to this list, they didn't have anything specific to say in particular about this level. So instead what they said was, if you get really stuck or you need some help, you can contact us. Go to the operations guide for our contact information. Apparently, I haven't looked yet, but apparently they like give you a phone number and email address where you can call if you get stuck on a level. They will actually, the creators of the game, Two Tribes, will actually help you get unstuck. Like, that's fucking impressive that they care that much that you see their game, that they will actually
kind
help
of
you get
stopped
through it.
In the era of game facts, you know. So obviously it was a big thing in the sort of the 80s, the helpline or whatever, you know, when you're playing these rock hard 8-bit. Yeah, it was kind of a scam.
But even then, they were always like,
it really wasn't actually,
you know,
it wasn't really
going to
help
whatever.
You out.
Yeah.
Kind of a scam?
Yeah, actually, Nintendo's used
it
to
was
be free
a scam.
Up until the maybe late, really late 80s or early 90s, Nintendo of America had a free helpline. And like if you see in The Wizard, when they keep calling and they've got the guys going through the binders for Ninja Gaiden and stuff, that service used to be free. And I think it was around the time that The Legend of Zelda came out, maybe a little bit after, but the quantity of calls got to be so overwhelming that they could no longer guarantee availability of their counselors, and they had to like hire so many people that they had to turn it into a 900 service. But I can tell you, I've actually seen it with my own eyes, that service is still run in-house by Nintendo of America. They have this cubicle farm in NOA headquarters where those people pick up the phone, so they haven't outsourced it to India or anything like that. They still actually do that in person at Nintendo headquarters. They answer those phone calls. It's pretty cool, but it's not free anymore. So anyway, Tokitori, I mean, I haven't beaten it yet, but so far I'm pretty impressed, and I think I'm just going to end up writing a review because I don't think it ever got a review on our site. Someone called it, and then they never followed through on it. So I think I'll probably end up reviewing it in a few days when I finish it. But yeah, I really like it. And Kevin, I know you're listening. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that. So I'm done. And John is next.
All right. I'm still playing through Space Invaders Extreme. And I can confirm that with the paddle, it's a lot better. The controls
really?
A lot better.
What about the balance between better and easier? I mean, is it just like, you know, how would you decouple the two?
The thing is, I mean, when going back and forth between the paddle and the normal D-pad, the D-pad really just seems like you're like you're playing, I don't know, like in mud. It's just, it's not, I don't think it's necessarily easier, but you just have a lot better feel for the game with the paddle. It just
so it's more responsive, what you say is more responsive with the paddle, primarily?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely more responsive with the paddle. And the thing is, the interesting thing is, I think that they kind of know that because they don't allow you to play online with the paddle.
Yes, they've built that in. All the rankings, the ranking stuff is standardized so that everybody's using the D-pad, whereas if you're just playing it, you know, for your own sort of purposes or through the one player, whatever, that you can use the paddle for.
Yeah. So, John, tell us about the online, because I still haven't tried it. I've been meaning to, and I still haven't.
That's the thing. I haven't actually played anybody online either. Tonight, I'm actually probably going to hook up with Zach to try that out.
We can play, too.
Okay, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And
I've got all the friend codes available on the site in my entered into my game as well. So
yeah, let's do that this week. Definitely set up.
I need to put mine on there. And actually, this would be a good time to remind our listeners that if you have a Wii or DS game with friend codes and you want to actually find people to play it with, you can go to our forums. There's a special section on the forums just for friend codes, and there's a thread for every game, basically, that anybody has any interest in.
Yep.
And you find the thread, post your friend code, post your friend code, and add all the ones above it, and now you have a whole list, and you might want to wait a couple days for other people to add your code back, or you can send them private messages to remind them because they may not go check it every day.
Yeah.
But it's a very good way to fill up with friend codes if you just want somebody to play with.
Yeah, something that I think we should probably do in the future, even though, you know, nobody's going to volunteer to set this up. But something we should do is, I've seen on Cheap Ass Gamer, which is another site, but they have actual meetup times. So they'll say, you know, 9 p.m. on a Thursday.
We'll be online. We did that with Pokemon last year a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. I think, but that's something that we might maybe consider floating in the future. But
that's a good idea, because the trick is, even if you have a lot of people on your friends list, and this is especially true in like Smash Brothers, for instance, even if you have a lot of people loaded in as I do on Smash Brothers, it seems like nobody's ever there.
Yeah,
you know, they have to be playing at exactly the right time, and it ends up that it's just you're not likely to find a friend online unless you set it up outside. So it would be a good idea to have a communal time where it wouldn't even have to be specific to a game. Mm-hmm. You could just say, we're going to be playing something online at this time on Wii or DS, and here are some of the more popular games. So load up on friend codes and get online at this time, and you'll probably find a few people on there to play with. That would be pretty cool.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
Really well. I mean, they're doing that for 360 and PS3. But of course, with that, you don't really need that. But I mean, that's more for people that are specifically fans of that site, right? But for Nintendo stuff, I mean, it would really help because there's no other way to do it. You have to do it externally. So,
yeah.
Definitely, I want to play you guys online sometime soon because I want to see. But yeah, I thought that was very interesting how they pretty much they sell the paddle peripheral, but you cannot use that online because if you were playing non-paddle people, there would probably be a problem with that because you can do stuff like...
They've got to standardize it, haven't they? They really do. And of course, they aren't... Correct me, they are not actually selling it officially in the West in any capacity, yes? The paddle.
That's true.
Nope, they're not.
Correct. Nope, they're not.
So it sounds like it would almost be like with a game like, say, Shadowrun or, you know, one of these games that's compatible, you can play online between Xbox and PC users.
Yeah.
It's kind of the difference between the PC people using a mouse and keyboard and being able to turn faster.
Exactly.
It's kind of an unfair advantage. But in some games, they say, if you want to play that, if you want to do that, then go ahead.
Yeah.
We'll give you the option, but you can also filter out and play people on the same system as you if you think that's more fair.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with the paddle, what it allows you to do, I mean, you can actually sit there and, you know, line up your ship to the smallest pixel, you know, which you just doesn't, you
fine
can't really,
control, yeah.
It's really fine control, and also going from, you know, from the far right side to the far left side, you can just spin it and go all the way over. You know, whereas with
so you can actually move your ship faster.
I think so. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Yeah. I mean, that would really change how you play the game. I want to try this. I really should import one because I love that game so much.
It's a great game. And the other thing, Greg definitely, I'm sure, wanted to touch on this as well. But Bango Spirits comes out this week, and
yes, it does.
We're definitely going to be playing that online.
Well, I haven't mentioned this yet on the show, but I played this. I didn't play it. I watched the demo guy play it at E3. I didn't have time to play it myself. But I got to see it for a few minutes and listen to him talk about it. And that game is basically like they could have just called it Clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Like just the things going
mental
on the screen.
Yeah.
I can't. I couldn't even comprehend. Like I was actually watching it on a big LCD screen. I could not understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. Even on that big screen, you know, like 10 times bigger than the DS screen, and I'm looking at it eye level, and I still couldn't understand what was happening.
Yeah, it's
it'll be pretty insane.
It'll be interesting to see exactly what it is. I mean, from what I understand, you can actually stop, like pause the game while you're playing and rearrange enemies and stuff like that if you want.
Yeah, you can do anything with the level. Yeah, you can create entirely new ones. That's a big part of the game. And obviously it's got this curious sort of like to circumvent the friend code sort of architecture. It does it as these sound files which you can sort of record and then, you know, put up on the internet, and then people just play it into the microphone on their DS and then they've got your level.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty damn cool solution. You know, it's a really cool use of the microphone on the DS, mm-hmm. and it's a nice solution. You know, it's like it allows you to do these repository websites where you can just collect all these levels that people have designed.
Because there are issues.
You don't have to know who they are. You
there
can,
are
like,
real.
Make it a YouTube
yeah, exactly. There were real issues because obviously with the friend code architecture is very much, I suppose, from Nintendo point of view, necessary with user generated content. You know, even if the tools are fairly limited, they all wish to ward against the prospect of someone somehow, with whatever ingenuity is necessary, creating something offensive with it. Mm-hmm. So, but with these games like, say, Mario vs. Donkey Kong 2, that had a level editor that was, you know, that needed friend codes. If you have that game, and it's really difficult to actually just go and get levels, really, for that have been generated, right. You know, because you either have to have people that have the game, or maybe, like, if you on forums like ours, you can get some, and I think Nintendo provide a few, but you're not really getting that sense of, like, all the people that are making the levels. That are making
right, the community is limited to the people who you have friend codes for.
Exactly,
and
really
Boomblox
like,
has the same problem. I mean, in that case, you only need the system code, so it's a little less limited. At least it's not game specific.
Yeah,
but still, how many people on my Wii System's friends list do I know who have Boomblox?
Well, and also,
and
I mean, it's even less than Smash
one,
Brothers,
maybe
because
two.
With Smash Brothers, at least you can kind of go on and it'll send you one, like by itself.
Right.
In addition to, like, what, do you need both codes to get levels or something? I forget, both the system and the game code, which is kind of annoying. But with Boomblox, obviously, there's no, like, central, like, hub or anything. You can go and get, like, some levels that EA has thought, oh, these are good, well, you might like these. No, it's purely, if you know someone or you're on a forum or something, you might be able to get some, but there's no kind of... Whereas with this Bangai thing, it's going to be so free that there's bound to be, you know, people on the net that are going to amass, you know, sort of levels and stuff.
Yeah.
And it'll be
there'll be tons of websites where you can find just as many levels as you could ever want. And it's really cool. I'm glad that companies like Treasure and also whoever developed Blastworks... for Majesco. I'm not sure who developed it, but I'm glad that these companies are finding ways around that problem, and they're actually finding ways to create real communities for user-generated content where you can actually get stuff that other people made without having to know them and without having to trade these crazy codes.
Yeah, it's funny. Know? It's like they're trying to build communities almost in spite of Nintendo.
In parallel, you know, from what Nintendo's efforts are, you know, not at all really integrated into them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's see. That's all pretty much I'm playing Nintendo wise. I'm kind of going through my back catalog on other consoles. Johnny and I play a little bit of Crackdown co-op.
That was confusing because you said it was your first time ever.
Yeah,
playing,
the first time I had ever even popped it into my console. And of course, I was also I also happened to be playing at 4 a.m, so I couldn't use voice chat.
We couldn't.
So it was pretty comical.
Nice.
It was a mess. He was basically coming over to where I was on the Shaijin Island, which is the last area of the game with really difficult enemies, and he's got his little totally inexperienced character, and he's just getting slaughtered.
Yeah.
And then the only supply point that he had was in the middle of the world. So then he would have to trek all the way back across every single time he died.
Oh, he can only
it
use...
couldn't have been very fun.
He can
you,
only
I
use
mean.
His supply no. points. He can't use the ones that you've unlocked.
I guess so. Yeah, I wasn't sure how it was working, but he kept respawning.
I mean, that's...
in the center of the map, and it was just so far away from where I was.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even really tell you what was going on. I could tell you that I did see. That's the thing. It's the first time. I mean, it was funny because it was the first time I ever played it, and I'm playing co-op, which lays an entire set of rules on it. So. But I could see all the guys that you've killed, right? Like, it, you know, so I was kind of hopping into your game in the sense that it was showing me everybody that you've killed. And
so you totally spoiled the game for him, Johnny.
Well,
nah,
that game's
there's not that much to spoil.
No, there isn't.
But I mean, it's you should definitely play some single player and build up your character a little bit, and also get used to what the fuck is going on and what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I actually did that.
And once you get that, I think we can have a lot of fun with co-op, and I can actually join your game and help you play through the campaign and help you go kill some of these guys, and that would be a lot of
fun. Yeah, actually, I did put some time in with it, and you know, I got like my jumping, I upped that a little bit, so now I can jump up higher. And I also learned how to do the auto targeting, which makes things a million times easier.
And you can't play without
that. No, actually, it's completely mandatory. But the only other thing I just wanted to kind of bring up here is. There's a key release coming out on PSP. I'm not too sure when it's coming out. You know where this is going. It's a revised version of Choaniki coming out for the PSP.
Revised. It's the Redux.
Yep. So
yes.
I'm definitely looking
forward to it. It's been polished off, you might say. Waxed up. Waxed up a little.
So yeah, I'm hoping to as soon as that comes out, I'm going to be all over
it. Yeah, I still haven't caught that.
Can you
it still has
can you play import? Is the PSP region free?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, snap. So you can actually import a copy of it. That's exciting.
John, is this your kind of game?
I mean, I'm not only excited, I'm aroused.
Well, there you go.
The problem is if you purchase this and they ship it across international borders, you're going to be put on some blacklist.
He probably already
you're going to be on some watch
Johnny,
list.
He probably already is. He's a Canadian living in Atlanta.
That's true. That's true. I guess it all depends on what the box art is like. I'd be curious to see what the box art is like for Choaniki. I'm sure it'll involve rippled muscles and speedos. But I can only hope.
I think you could. The one thing I've heard with this news is that apparently the original Choaniki is the least homoerotic of the Choaniki series.
So, that's good to hear.
There you go.
Maybe they'll re-up their free.
It's only like crotch thrusts constantly, as opposed to like just wangs hanging out from enemy faces.
Maybe in the remake they're going to bring it up, or should I say, bring it down to the level. Of the sequels, you know, and really
it's,
make it a
it's
little
sort of
more
like
consistent.
Adding the depth of Super Metroid to the original Metroid layout with Zero Mission, but with the homoeroticism.
It's exactly like that.
Choaniki, as gay
just,
as it wants
I
to
just
be.
Verbally defecated on one of my favorite games ever.
Absolutely, yeah. It brings new meaning to the phrase Zero Suit, I guess.
There's nothing wrong with gay video games, and Choaniki's not even the only one. You've got stuff like Bully now, where you can
Captain Rainbow.
You can make your character gay if you want. We don't know if Captain Rainbow is gay or not. I mean, that Japan may have completely different ideas about culture and stereotypes.
Some resemblance to some things in Choaniki, though, minus the phallicness of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the issue with Choaniki is not that it's gay, but that it's overtly sexualized and cheesy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's obviously comical. It's obviously not intended as like a serious game for gay people. It's a comical game for straight people who think gay stuff is funny. So that's the issue. I just want to put that disclaimer out there. You know,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
I think Choaniki has a lot against homosexuality, probably.
Wow.
Thank you, Jerry Seinfeld.
Exactly.
Yes.
All right, that's all I got.
All right, so Greg, wrap it up, please.
So apart from getting my ass handed to me by Space Invaders in the absence of a paddle, I got the chance to take on a bit of Wheel of Golf this week.
Ooh!
Yeah, I, I like
first time that's been discussed.
I like the Camelot golf game, the Mario Golf one, the N64, and the Toadstool Tour on the GameCube. So I was kind of interested to see how it would turn out. And I did actually. I know we all hate it when facts get in the way of James' rantings, but I did check out the review scores, and it hasn't got any below a 6. So it's kind of mixed, but no one's really slammed it. And I can kind of see why when you play the game, because it's very, very similar, really, to the Mario Golf games. Obviously, the Mario license isn't there. It's pretty generic, and then there's some unlockable Capcom character costumes, which have got some quite obscure choices, like the sort of female pirate costume from Zack and Wiki. Johnny,
really?
I mean, it's got like a Zack costume, which is like kind of predictable, but like that one, the supporting character, that was kind of a surprise.
Honestly, I think Zack and Wiki appearing in anything other than the original Zack and Wiki game is kind of surprising.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know,
so,
I'm impressed that Capcom actually hasn't already abandoned those characters, considering the sales of that game.
The facts are what I want them to be. I'm just going to point that out right now before I continue on.
Yeah, I think
James creates his own reality.
That has been amply demonstrated.
As editor, yes, I do create my own reality on this podcast.
You're actually the reality editor.
I create everyone's reality.
Let me just tinker with this a bit.
Like, think of all the fun things I could do with that last Choaniki conversation.
Really? You're going to make it more incriminating than that? I'd like to see this.
James, I think your ability to edit reality is equal to your ability to edit features.
Fantastic, you mean? Because I'm pretty sure that we got compliments for the two best features in the site's history in the last couple months. Oh!
Have you ever read GameCube's... Have you ever read the Lost Gems of GameCube feature? Because that one's really good. I think Steven put that one
Lost
together.
Lost Gems of, and the best
Steven
games.
Or Carl,
the best
maybe.
Games one was good as well. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah, a little not quite as fun to put together.
But anyway, back in the world of We Love Golf. So if you played the Mario Golf games, very, very similar to that, just without the Mario characters, which may or may not be something that's a big minus for you. Depending on how much of a motivating factor that was and you picking those games up. But the motion controls is basically interpreting that old like meter timing based scheme. It's not like it's not trying to do anything even vaguely approximating a 1-to-1 or even like a Wii Sports kind of thing. It's not really like that at all. It's kind of, I guess you could say, it's kind of gesture in a way, in the sense that really you've just got a certain amount of time to sort of draw the Wii remote back to set your power. And then at another point, you will then have to sort of time when you follow through so that it hits a mark, pretty much like as if you were pressing a button at a certain time.
Have you tested whether this works if you just basically waggle the remote?
No, it's not that crude, certainly.
Okay,
because
well,
timing is the point, you know, because the fact that it's based around timing for a start. What isn't really in there is the same principle as you've had in these old golf games. Your timing equals accuracy. You know, you get the power where you want, you get the direction where you want, you don't hook or slice it. But the only area where there's any kind of real nuance in terms of, because it's timing, it doesn't matter how slowly or quickly you actually do the swing in terms of for generating power, as long as you do it at the correct time. But if there is one part of it which does use power, so you can do like a power shot, which means you kind of go off the scale of your club and sort of give it some extra distance. And in that case, the greater the velocity of your sort of swing, it will actually add extra power. So there's a little bit of nuance, a little bit of sort of velocity, like sort of like what Boom Blocks does, I guess, with how it. But it's not a big part of the game, really. It's kind of an add-on thing. So it's, I guess in this sort of pre-Motion Plus era, it has been really difficult to do anything that's really like a one-to-one kind of thing. Apparently the Tiger Woods guys are making a really good sort of fist of it this year.
It's an admirable effort. I've played the Tiger Woods, and I think it works a lot better than you would think. And it works a lot better than Wii Sports Golf.
Yeah, so that's kind of, and that's not what this is going for. This is kind of going the whole other way, which may be a sort of, it's kind of, it works at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not capturing all the kind of nuance that you think, oh wow, we've got the Wii remote, let's do all this, because it is very much adapting an old way of doing it, just with, it does, I mean, I think the timing's less mechanical because it's not as simple as pressing a button, so there's a greater kind of capacity to screw up, like, randomly, which is kind of a bit more, it just adds a bit more of a random element rather than with the old games, because it's pressing a button is so simple. You can't, once you have that timing down, it's very difficult to mess it up, really.
Have you tried the online?
I have tried the online. It works okay. Obviously, it's got, like, if you do with friends, you have more options. If you do, and I don't know anyone that's got the game. I don't know anybody on staff or on the site at all that's got the game. So
I don't either. I don't either.
So I just did the random, and it's, you've got, like, basically a shot clock of a minute per shot. And you can choose between two rule sets, which is, you know, for players that are sort of beginner players and advanced players. And it seems to run fine. It could be okay. I mean, I guess if you do have... I think the main usefulness of it would probably be if you do have a friend that owns the game and you sort of playing a similar level, you could get into some pretty nice competitive action. And it's nice that they went and included that for the Western release, because it wasn't in the Japanese release. This is something they've done extra for the online period,
you mean?
Yes. It was not in the Japan. It released in Japan either at the end of last year or at the very beginning of this one. It did not have online at all. Whereas in Europe and America it does. So that's fine. I mean, it's nothing earth shattering, but it's nice that it's in there. And if you do have somebody to play with, you might find it pretty good. I guess the biggest beef I have with the game, other than the fact that it's not, like, very different from Mario Golf at all, so it's nothing, like, revolutionary or even particularly new. It's just, like, kind of... maybe it's a little more fun with the Wii Remote. Maybe some people find it more approachable with the Wii Remote. Is that it's got a real balance issues in terms of... Mario Golf was not the biggest... Like, it was not Fort Knox as golf games go. It was pretty damn accessible. But in this case... They've gone the early courses and the way the early characters are is just that it's ridiculously easy. You know, there's no challenge in it at all. The margin of error on the timing of the swing is so great that you'd have to miss it by a mile for it to really matter to the directions you shot. But what happens is very slowly you will unlock, like, the different courses, more powerful characters and stuff that it will balance sort of more appropriately for people who are more advanced players or familiar with the old games. But it just takes forever. It's like, for instance, in Mario Golf there was a normal character and a star character, and the star ones basically, like, they hit the ball further, but everything was more margin of error was tighter, so you had to be really good to use them properly. And with this, they actually have three levels of star character, and to unlock those levels, you have to beat them, like, in a one-on-one match to unlock each level. So to unlock the character, you've got to do it once, and then a subsequent three times to actually get to the full, you know, that you would expect, that it kind of balances out for more advanced players. And that's just ridiculous.
Are you just saying it's kind of tedious to actually get to the meat of the game?
Yeah, if you were somebody totally that's familiar with this kind of game and you've got a certain aptitude for it, once you get the basic mechanics down, understand how it relates to the mechanics of the old game, then it's just like, well, now I want to be able to play it on courses that are tough, in conditions that are tough, and with characters that, while they can hit the ball far and they can do a lot of things, if you mess up, it will cost you, and you will go in the water, you will go in the bunker. And it will take a long time to unlock all of that stuff. And I just think it leaves quite a bad first impression for a lot of people. If you're familiar with the game, it's just like, oh, this is ridiculously easy, that they needn't have done. I mean, they really needed to rationalise that progression somehow, so it was just, you know, you could either choose the beginner path, or you could choose, like, some sort of, you know, advanced path from the get-go, because it's just tedious, and I don't think it's necessary at all to make the game accessible. All it does is actually make the game less accessible for people who are already familiar with it. So that's a bad
choice. It sounds
like
they're really, like, kowtowing to like the whole Blue Ocean gamers, and they're kind of ignoring the fact that probably most people who are interested in getting this game are people who've played things like Hot Shots and Mario Golf.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I think that's probably true.
I gotta think that the majority of people who come to this game have played a Camelot Golf game before on some other system.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like, it sounds to, from what you're saying, like they're gonna be kind of bored.
Yes, because I mean, it is tedious to do all this unlocking, but also I think, all right, well, maybe you could debate how much they should try and sort of accommodate the Blue Ocean crowd or whatever, but even if you're going to do it, there must be a better way than this. There must be a better way to segment it, you know, specialize something so that you've got parallel paths to where you want to go rather than this absurd layer on layer of unlockables. Or maybe it's just a really cynical attempt to extend the life of the game in one player, because the modes are exactly the same as what you've seen in Mario Golf before. There's nothing really new, so it's...
Maybe it's not the game that's cynical, but you.
Well, I'm not going to deny that, if you want to... But,
all right, anyway, man, I got to cut you off. We got to end new business. It's gone on long enough, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with your listener mail. Okay, we're back with listener mail, and I'll just remind you that if you have a question you want to ask us, or you have a comment about the show, or anything like that, any kind of letter that you want to send us, barring any sexual themes, but we'll get to that later, you can send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And our first letter is from Eric, and I think James is going to ask that one.
I am? Okay.
Yes, we'll go in the same order that we did new business.
Okay. Yeah. How do video game cheat codes get released to the public?
Does anybody know?
I'm gonna take a shot in the dark here that a lot of them come out from the PR agents that hype the game as sort of a post-release buzz.
That's correct. Yes. Most cheat codes are released by the publisher as basically a way to build interest in the game, either sort of at the time the game comes out or later on, you know, to try to revive interest in it.
And, you know, the best example of the later on would be the Naboo Starfighter being in the original Rogue Squadron game.
That's a really good point.
That came out like 2 years later. It didn't even follow the same pattern of cheat codes for the game. You had to enter like 4 separate codes that none of them were acknowledged in a row, and then it finally took because they were so, like, apparently they were told that if this ever got out before it was released, it was going to be their asses.
Yeah, I'm sure. There was a lot of secrecy dealing with Lucas. But that's a cool point. That's very unusual for a game to have been out for that long of a time and to still, you know, have a cheat code announced by the publisher.
It was like 2 years later, too, or something like that.
It was, yeah. Well,
that game had
Rogue Squadron came out.
It must have been
in
1 year. Right?
Well, no,
it was
because,
about a year because Rogue Squadron came out in November of 1998. And the movie Episode 1 came out in May of 99.
Oh, okay. Well, it was an old version of the fighter in it, though, because I remember it does have some pretty striking differences from what was actually in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a much longer, narrower craft.
Yeah, I mean, I think occasionally the developer will put in some things that they don't even tell the publisher about, or they certainly don't tell the PR people, and players will discover them somehow. I seem to remember some of Rare's games had cheat codes that were sort of predictable. Maybe it was Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
Had codes that were real words that related to things in the game. And you could actually kind of decipher or guess what the codes might be based on, you know, a predictable result. So, like, say... I don't even remember. Some of the codes had involved like replacing Banjo with a refrigerator or something like that. And, you know, there and you could kind of figure out what the password would be to activate that based on whatever the trick was. So sometimes they're not announced by the developer, but you know people figure them out through other means. Sometimes they hack in with GameShark and they discover them that way.
Here are some of the examples from Banjo-Kazooie. Cheat lots of goes with many banjos was infinite lives. Or cheat give the bear lots of air was infinite air. Stuff like that.
Wow, those took forever to type in.
Yeah, they did. The longest one was unlock the gate in the desert level, which was cheat a desert door opens wide and ancient secrets wait inside. And it was all one word. It's like they got
this long
just to taunt you, or the ice key. Yeah. The ice key code was even longer. Cheat now you can see an ice key which you can have for free.
Wow.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, this was entered by butt stomping letters on a grid.
Yes, it was.
And there was no idea of how long it would take if the people listening have not played Banjo or never bothered with any of this stuff.
Cheat the jiggy does so off you got into freezy peaks and did it snow. Unlock the freezy.
That's a code?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Cheat the jiggy. The jiggy's done.
Well,
so off you go.
I think it's good that we don't really have these kind of codes in games very often anymore. I think GTA is probably the best example of a game that still has cheat codes. And those are literally cheat codes. They basically let you play the game in, you know, outside the framework of the story. They let you do things like you just spawn a tank in the middle of the street so you can go wreck shit with it. And a lot of people play GTA for because they like to play around with those codes. Basically, it's literally they play it as a sandbox, and they don't care about the structure of the game and the story at all. And that's fair. That's a valid way to play the game. And obviously, the developers intend for some people to play it that way because they include the codes. I remember that's how I was introduced to GTA 3 was like my friend, my suite mate in the dorms was calling me over like, "Hey, dude, come check this out." And he's just like dropping tanks all over the place and blowing them up. And, you know, I was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool that you can do all this crazy stuff and get the cops to chase after you." So anyway, codes most of the time are basically leaked out through the PR, you know, as part of the marketing for the game. And some of the cheat sites, like the corporate ones, you know, like IGN or MyCheats.com, I think that's 1UPS, they have special deals with the PR people, or, you know, they have good contacts and they get those things early and stuff
that.
Also now, I mean, you have
it's pretty much a PR thing.
Of like the Brady Games strategy guides, which I'm sure they some comped ones too.
Sure. That's because, you know, because they kick back the sales back to the portion of those.
I would say a lot of those corporate sites probably get them in exchange for pre-game release coverage too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
There's a lot of these sort of like dual hand jobs in the gaming media industry.
Yes, indeed.
That's one way.
It's a good way to put it.
And you could also say that NWR ain't getting
that's right.
any.
No, we don't.
All right, so the next question is from Ryan, or the next letter is from Ryan. And Ryan writes, "Hey guys, I just listened to episode 108, and once again you mentioned how slow the Wii is when downloading from the Wii Shop channel. There's no reason that should be happening. The Wii Shop moves very quickly for me because I went to the Wii Tech Support page on Nintendo.com and followed their advice to configure my router to work better with the system. I'm not making excuses for Nintendo. It really should work better right out of the box, but I'm just letting you know that you're putting up with slow speeds for nothing." So, good piece of advice from Ryan there. If you have particularly low speeds on your Wii when you download things, you might want to look into this and see if you need to reconfigure your wireless router.
And I'll try to look up the link for this. So if you're watching listening on the AAC feed, it should be directly to the left of where the audio is right now.
We can even put it in the article for the episode. So yeah, thanks Ryan. That's a good tip. Your mileage may vary, I guess, but it's worth trying if you have a big problem with that.
All right.
So John, please.
Adrian asks, "Would you guys ever consider bringing back Mike's Crazy Mailbag? I'd always wanted to email in back when that was running so I could ask the guys to recount their most awkward sexual experiences, but being in the UK, I'd always be too late, or more likely, I'd just forget."
So I'm going to say that we're probably never going to bring that back because this show has essentially devolved into an entire Mike's Crazy Mailbag. And
there's no Seminoles-based passwords in this show. What are you talking about?
Well, that's true.
But aside from like,
but
that was Mike's crazy mail. That was Mike's crazy mailbag, as I recall. So yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good
point. And
I just never thought the results were funny enough to warrant that feature. And plus, Mike isn't on the show anymore, so we
yeah,
can't
so
it'd
do have it. To be something like James Sober Mailbag or something like that.
Well, that sounds like a barrel.
Yeah, it really does.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's just a great segment.
Good James, do you like Ubisoft, James? No.
Well, see, what the thing is, what we could have, though...
We should be so lucky to get
we
that
could,
in.
We could have, like...
Well, it's sober mailbag. He's obliged to do it.
Well, ask it. All right, just go for it.
Well, hold on. Here's an idea. I think what we could have, though, we could have James's email rant of the week. That's something. What,
so what?
We pretty much already have that.
No. I like where he's going with this. Just tell them to send us a gaming-related topic, and I'll come up with a rant about it.
That's a great idea.
James, why does Ocarina of Time suck so bad, James? And then you have to
I can do that, actually.
You have to take
I can
that
do
position.
That.
You know?
There you go. Well, the floor is open. We will take your suggestions for James's... insane rant
insane if you don't understand them, and I understand
them
perfectly.
To get back to Adrian's real question, my most awkward sexual experience was being asked about my most awkward sexual experience by a stranger on the internet.
Yep,
mine was having my most awkward sexual experience with a stranger on the internet.
Whoa. That's the end of that story. Thank you. Moving on.
Okay, I've got the next question. This is from Sophia, aka Golden Phoenix.
She doesn't even have to give us that AKA anymore. We just know.
Never mind. I want to begin by praising Nick for doing a great job last episode. It's always a pleasure to hear someone relatively new that doesn't make me nauseous. I can't imagine
she had a very
we do it all for you.
She had a very averse reaction to Billy being on the show, as I understand
Billy
it.
Billy's an acquired taste.
Anywho.
Well, Billy's very opinionated. It goes, I mean, you may not agree with everything he says, that's for damn sure.
Anywho, now to the question part of this. With gaming quickly expanding to new markets, do you feel there are things in current game design that you think should evolve with it? For example, I feel developers need to take more notice of female gamers and create more games with female leads that aren't just eye candy. I do not mean Ubisoft's pathetic attempts at creating female-focused games, or should I say female games? Yeah. are there any other changes do you feel could be made to even more traditional games to further open doors to new gamers without sacrificing key elements of them?
It's an interesting question. I mean, as far as the female stuff, you do have Mirror's Edge coming up, which has a female gamer, a female character that doesn't look like a stick with boobs on it.
Well,
so I mean,
well, and
that's
you basically
potentially. You also have Beyond Good and Evil 2 coming out. That's very interesting, very intelligent female lead character who's not.
And in the case
of
Mirror's Edge, you basically
sex.
Never see her anyway.
Yeah, and also
it's true. So it doesn't even really matter that she's male or female. They made her female because they thought it was interesting. But obviously, they're not idealizing her.
It's the same deal with Portal too, where the only reason you know the character is female is because you can see your reflection in the portals.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, also I would say that the villain in Portal is a very interesting female character.
Well, it's a computer.
Yes, but I mean, obviously, a female computer has a female personality.
Well, the one thing I will say about Mirror's Edge is that it's kind of like it's a first-person shooter, but it's not 100% combat-focused, running around shooting people and killing people. There's a little bit more to it than that.
In fact, I would say that's not even the main emphasis.
The main emphasis is just the leaping around and.
Yeah.
I would say it's a first-person platformer
with guns.
Yeah, it's like a first-person platformer without all the testosterone, pretty much.
Yeah.
You're going to say that, and then we're going to get the game, and it's going to be like unlockable characters from Gears of War.
Unlockable, like...
they couldn't
Sophia's
jump
question,
anyway.
This question really goes beyond that, though. That was just her suggestion. Yeah. I mean, as far as what... You know, do we have any changes that we think could bring in more people... You know, like things being done to these traditional games, like she talks about, that actually open doors for new people. I would say my opinion is for online stuff, and this came up earlier when we were talking about the Xbox 360 community, so to speak, of playing shooters like Call of Duty 4. But I think there are a lot of advancements to be made in the way that online matchmaking works and the way that online games, period, work and the way that cooperation and teamwork are encouraged or not encouraged in online games that could seriously improve the experience for new people. And not only Blue Ocean gamers, but people like me who typically don't play a lot of online games, but we do want to try them out.
Yeah.
You want to give it a shot. You know, like I go into Gears and I have a pretty terrible experience online. And that does not encourage me to play more of it. And that's a game where, you know, if I'd had a really good online experience, I might have gone out and bought my own.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean,
after I returned
the
rental.
Once you have an experience like that, you pretty much have a choice. Either don't go back to it or just basically say, okay, I'm going to come back to it and do this over and over and over again until I'm good at it. And not everybody wants to do that.
Right.
And I think that sort of zaps the fun out of it. It makes it more of a job than something
more of attrition.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is something Nintendo in the past has claimed that they were taking
the Ninja
really seriously.
And then we got Snake's Kart Online.
Yeah, and there have been a couple times when Nintendo said, you know, we're really concerned about people going online and having good experiences, and they really haven't done anything in particular to do that. I mean, they had some kind of matchmaking service in Mario Kart where it was supposed to find people of the same skill level. It didn't work at all.
No.
I tried it multiple times. It didn't work at all.
Mm.
And since then, most of the online games that they've done don't even have that feature. You know, most of the online games they have now, basically, it just has one random match, and it's literally random. So you have no idea what the skill level of the other person will be. So I think Nintendo should take a fresh look at this. I think all companies that make online games should look at this and say, how can we bring people into online games in a non-confrontational, non-intimidating way and make it fun for them without dumbing it down for everybody else? And I think in some ways Team Fortress 2 is a good step in the right direction because they looked at online games and they said it's really hard to make people cooperate as a team because everybody's in there to play for themselves. They don't really feel like there's anything to be gained from working as a team with strangers. And so Team Fortress 2 is designed so that by doing the selfish thing, you're still helping the team. In other words, all the characters are designed and balanced such that if you do whatever is best for you, that will actually help the team. So you don't have to make any special effort to play as a team except maybe to communicate a little bit. All you have to do is play the game, but it feels like you're working as a team because the game is designed so well to do that. And I think it's not perfect. It's still one of those games where you jump in and you're probably going to get headshotted after 5 seconds.
Yep.
You're going to be like, what? I didn't even play the game. But that goes away pretty quickly if you stick with it. It's a game. It's not as intimidating as, say, Counter-Strike, which I can't even play. Like, I've tried playing Counter-Strike. It's literally you die every 2 seconds. And it's just like, I don't even know where I am. You know, it spawns you in these random places. It's like, I don't even know what's going on. So there's a lot of room for improvement in online
I mean,
games.
I also...
I was just going to say, well, going back to the sort of spirit of the question in terms of what Sophia's talks about more traditional games, it's interesting because obviously Nintendo's brought in the Wii Remote and that interface undeniably has brought more people into the big tent. But I guess the question is, to what extent has it brought them into the tent of traditional games? You know, it's very.
Do you think adding the Wii Remote stuff to Mario Galaxy brought in new people?
Yeah, exactly. See, this is the thing that's interesting to me because they've talked about bridge games. They've talked about something between Wii Sports and, you know, something like a Mario Galaxy or something. You know, something that's got that interface that draws people in. But the actual kind of overarching structures and goals of the games are more akin to traditional games rather than something like, say, Wii Music, which, you know, is quite explicitly not a traditional game at all, or even a game at all.
And that, what are the examples of these bridge games?
They've talked about it, but they haven't done it. I mean, you know, and I mean, they talk about stuff like Sluggers, and I mean, I don't really see that as an example.
Sluggers is an outsourced Namco game of dubious quality. It's really not exactly what you
want.
And
it doesn't even have the nuance of Wii Sports in terms of the controls and the interface. It's more
exactly.
So I guess the point is that this is clearly something that Nintendo wants to do, but it hasn't yet. I don't think it's come I honestly
giving it lip service.
I honestly expected that it was going to happen at this year's E3. I thought they were going to show at least one sports game that would act as a bridge building on a Wii Sports title.
Yeah, but they didn't do it. I guess the question is going to be going forward whether then the bridge now is going to be not from sort of Wii Sports but from Wii Sports Resort. Is that Motion Plus maybe is going to be the vehicle for some of these games that they
can do
something like
but,
that.
Because
they're really just complicating it, aren't they? By reintroducing Wii Sports and taking the user base back to the basics of these very simple mini games with simple controls, they're really kind of undoing that intention of graduating people to more complicated, you know, more complex, more traditional type games. And I mean, I love Wii Sports. I'm really excited about Resort, as I've said before, but I think if their goal is to wean people off of those types of experiences, introducing Wii Sports Resort, which will sell 10 million copies, is not the way to do it.
Yeah, I guess the problem is just that it seems like they've hit a bit of a brick wall design-wise with what they can do with the standard Wii Remote for these kinds of bridge games. They just haven't delivered. This was clearly an intention of theirs, but I don't really see where they've hit upon it yet, and I don't know whether they're going back to the drawing board, because I think the interface really does make a difference, you know, in terms of you could sell people on a more traditional game in terms of the gameplay, the structure and all that, if the interface is more friendly. But so
look at Phantom Hourglass. It was very successful, at least in Japan.
It was a huge boost.
A new interface to a traditional game, and they actually got new gamers like Blue Ocean people to play
it was a significant bump on where Zelda games had been going in Japan, and it sold very well in the other territories too. Yeah. I mean, as you would expect on the strength of the brand.
Well, as you intimated, the Zelda games had been doing relatively poorly in Japan.
There'd been a drop off, whereas this was a rebound. So that's what they've been looking to do.
And that kind of worries me because Galaxy did quite poorly in Japan.
Yeah, it was
just
shy of a million. I think it's still just shy.
That's pathetic for a big Mario game, and one that's so good. And it kind of worries me that they're going to take a look at that and say, we've really got to.
Yeah, well, I do think that will be somewhat mitigated by the worldwide impact. But yeah, I mean, one could have said the same thing about Zelda as well, in terms of the sales were still pretty robust, outside of Japan for Zelda games. But you still had this sort of driving force of making it sell in Japan going into some of the decisions that
made
for Zelda.
I think the pattern shows that Mario is probably due for a new gamer. I hate to say casual, but super accessible format in the next big Mario game, and it may be like Phantom Hourglass. It may be something that doesn't exactly sit well with the traditional long-term fans of the series.
I mean, I guess.
Although for me, the interface wasn't really the issue in Phantom Hourglass. I like the controls.
Yeah,
it's the structure.
Just delivered quite on the whole package. I think the ingredients were there. I just don't think they quite. But I guess that's my point. Really, is that I think Nintendo have the tools to do what Sophia's talking about in this question. I just think they haven't got there yet. They haven't managed it. But I think it's possible with the Wii Remote, because just that the shape of it, the concept of it as a remote control stuff, they've bridged a lot of that gap, and then they just need to fill in the rest with the game design and the sort of ingenuity part.
I think one thing that needs to change, and I'm not going to harp on this too much, is that some elements of games that have been in there just for the sense of doing an easy mission design need to go. Collection quests, gone. Escort stuff, gone. So the stuff that we all hate in games that we soldier through because
there's other stuff
we like doing.
I guess it's funny you should mention that, because, of course, like, heart pieces were gone from Phantom Hourglass and things like that. So
I mean, we've built up sort of resigned ourselves to these, but I gotta imagine
that someone
who's new to gaming might just go, this is boring.
Yeah, what's the
and
point?
And just stop. Because, we've built up this concept that, we have to get through it, but there'll be something better behind it.
Yeah, and
that
I would say
something that benefits everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of the wording of the question, it's that those sorts of things are not key elements of traditional games. They're often found in traditional games, but
I would say in some cases they almost are key elements. I would say that... In a rare game, a key element is the pointless collection.
Yeah, but that's not a good thing, is it?
They didn't say
They pretty much took the collection collection out of, say, Galaxy, which is a 3D platformer in a, you know, a genre well known for overdone collecting. And there is a lot of stuff to collect in Galaxy, but most of it's star bits, and they have very little bearing on the game.
Yeah, that's pretty much
so. You need a pretty minimal amount of star bits to play the game, and so you can ignore them if you want to. Whereas, like in Rare, the problem was that you either had to collect things in order to complete the game,
900 bananas,
or they led you to believe that by collecting all the things you would get some amazing reward that would make it all worthwhile.
A million bananas.
So it kind of activated this completist feeling in us, and then usually the reward for collecting all that stuff was absolutely not worth it.
Or nothing at all in some cases.
Yeah, or nothing at all.
Thank you, Rare. You.
Yeah, well, you don't have to worry about playing their games anymore, do you, James?
So. I didn't have to play their games at any time. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Although you might have felt that way if you're an N64 owner.
Yeah. I'm afraid that I did feel that way during the N64 era.
But it wasn't actually true.
Well, let's move on. We have one more question left. John, do you have anything to say?
The one final thought on that is that I would just like to see... I feel like in the actual look and art design of games, I feel like there's kind of a middle ground that isn't really being explored. It just seems like either you have... Over here, you have a lot of first-person shooters or RPGs that everything is kind of hyper-masculine. Or on the other end of the spectrum, you have stuff that looks like a Pixar movie. And I just feel like I think one of the reasons why I know that Sophia's mentioned Mirror's Edge, and I think one of the reasons why she's kind of hyped up for that game is that it's neither one of those things. It's the same thing with Portal too. Portal, there's no hulking guys that look like Hulk Hogan carrying around these massive guns. And on the other hand,
I would say even the new Prince of Persia would fit into that, where it's not. It's not hyper masculine. Like, you could say the second Warrior Within was, and clearly there was a backlash. And they've gone back to the more, just kind of even handed, the guy, he's not super muscular, he's not really hardcore, emo, goth, angsty, whatever. It's just he's a guy, he has to kill some things sometimes, but he doesn't want to.
Yeah, it's like you have these gameplay designs that don't necessarily dictate any particular look being put on them, but, they basically get shoehorned into, some kind of art style where people look at them and say, "Oh, that's a kid's game," regardless of whether it's a kid's game or not, or, "Oh, that's a game that's just some first-person shooter that some 16-year-old guy is going to want to play." I mean, kind of like, I think that kind of whole art style thing, that's the impression that people get from the game, and it will determine whether or not they're even remotely interested in playing it, male or female.
Well, I think a lot of newer games, and including the one we're about to talk about, are starting to show that you can have a colorful, artsy, very non-realistic type of graphics or visual look to the game without it looking like a kid's game. There's so much unexplored territory in presentation in video games. There's so many styles that really have not been explored at all. That are surefire, because they're unique, because it's unmined territory, there's no chance of you being shifted into those stereotypes of this is either, so-called hardcore crap, dingy looking, everything's muddy and gross and gray, or kiddie. Yeah, it doesn't look like either one. It doesn't look like anything, and so you can totally avoid that and make your game look unique, at least for the time being, until somebody else tries it. But that kind of leads us into the next question, and I think James is supposed to read this one.
Brandon from Honolulu writes, "Hello, everyone. Since last episode talked a lot about Xbox Live, and there was mentions of games that use enemies to progress.
Progress.
Are you going to actually change how I pronounce words now? Jeez.
No, I'm saying that the pronunciation here infers it's a different word.
You can edit that, James.
It's not progress, the noun. Yeah.
I'm just leaving it there.
No, I'm not being a douche. I'm saying progress is different than progress. It's a different word.
Has any of yous played Braid? It are amazing how many ways there be to use common enemies. Lovingly referred to as Goombas by some fans to solve many of the puzzles. It has a lot of great time-reversing mechanics, though unfortunately very few of them are apparent in the demo, since the first world is mostly straightforward except for some backtracking. The game is $15, which is a bit much, similar to Lost Winds being rather expensive for game its length. Sorry about the non-Nintendo topic, but last week's show, week 4, just really made me think of Braid, and it's an interesting game that has a lot of Mario references as well.
Yeah, so I'm sorry to Brandon and to James for interrupting there. But yeah, I did play Braid today, and John, you said you downloaded it.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to check it out yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully you will at some point. I'd like to hear what you think of it. There's already a spirited discussion among the staff over email, because David Trammell also downloaded it and played it. And it, first of all, I would say the game is worth $15. I mean, you can read about it at Penny Arcade. Tycho is kind of ranting on the subject. He's really upset with people arguing that it's not worth $15, because it is an unusual game. It's very original. And I've played through it. I think as far as the length of it, the amount of content, and the originality, I think it's very much worth $15. That's a good price for it. So, I think Braid is interesting to bring up to a primarily Nintendo audience, because it is basically a tribute to Mario games, Super Mario games, and it's really interesting. It's kind of a different way to look at platforming, because in this case, it's basically a puzzle game, but the puzzle mechanics don't involve moving blocks around and stuff like that. They involve jumping on enemies and jumping around and things like that. And so it's kind of the idea of using Mario-style gameplay in the service of a puzzle game, where you're trying to, you have these level designs, you're trying to get this key, but you have to do some really tricky, really clever stuff with working with the enemies and jumping between platforms and things like that in order to get to it. And then on top of that is this layer of time manipulation, which there's several different kinds of time manipulation in the game. It depends on which world you're in, but you can reverse time. Sometimes you can like create a bubble where time is slower inside the bubble, but it's normal outside of it. And you can create some weird situations with like phasing and stuff like that with that bubble. There's a lot of interesting ideas, and the story is unorthodox. I'm not going to say it's good, because I really don't. I think the story's way overrated, and I'm not going to spoil it. But you don't really get much out of the story at all until the very end of the game, and that part is cool, but it really has almost nothing to do with the rest of the game. And so I think I'm not really in this camp where. And I think Portal does the same thing, except the story part of Portal is kind of the last half of the game, not the very end, you know? And with Braid, it's sort of basically the very last level. Has some really interesting story stuff. It's very clever. It ties in with the gameplay mechanics. It sort of makes you rethink what you did before. But, like, all the story before that is just this tech stuff that pops up on the screen that's pretty much apropos of nothing. It really doesn't have anything to do with the game. It doesn't have that much to do with the rest of the story that you get at the end. So yeah, I think that part's overrated, but gameplay-wise, it's a really interesting game. And if you're a Nintendo fan and you happen to have a 360, I think it's something you should look into, because it fits in, again, in some ways it parallels Tokitori, in that you're sort of using, you have this, it's all about, it's a puzzle game, but it's a puzzle game in the context of a level design that looks like a platforming game. And whereas Tokitori, you really don't have those platforming moves, because you can't really jump or run around. You can't do that much. It's more about using these items. In Braid, it's all about jumping and running around and using these time mechanics, which are pretty interesting. And so if you're a Nintendo fan and you have access to this on Xbox Live Arcade, I think you should try it out. And it's really a shame that, you know, that because of storage solutions and also probably like RAM issues with the time reversal, the way you can rewind the entire level if you want to, it's probably not feasible to put this on WiiWare, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. It's really too bad, because I think this is the kind of game that a Nintendo audience on the Wii would actually be really interested in. So if you have a chance to check it out, I'd say you should.
Yes.
Maybe we should just end the show as soon as I finish talking.
What about DLC Monday?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to talk about
that. Skipped that.
Well, I just talked a lot, so how about one of you guys volunteer to go over that?
All right, I guess I'll do it. So do we just go in like it's a break, or do we just roll on?
No, we're still recording the show, man.
Oh.
This is rolling.
So this is all staying in?
We're still rolling.
Yeah, it's just go.
All right, so that's all for reader mail, and
yeah,
John
yeah.
doesn't want to talk anymore, so we're going to move into DLC Mondays. So the big title this week we already talked about was Strong Bad Episode 1 for WiiWare. It's 1,000 points. It's enormous. Talked about it. Everybody's happy with how that conversation concluded?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very final. Okay. Very final. Very quiet.
It's very final. It was the definitive Strong Bad Episode 1 Homestar Ruiner discussion. On the WiiWare, we have a set of TG16 games, and from the title, it looks like someone heard our punitive cries from yesterday. Parodier?
I think it's Parodier.
Star Parodier on the TG16, 900 points, import. And Break-In on the TG16, 700 points, also import.
Yeah.
So it's nice that we're still continuing to get import
These are two games from the import sort of dump that we had in Europe a couple of months ago. Well, because it was all at once. Break-In's the Naxat soft, the Devil's Crush guys pool game that I talked about a bit ago. That's I don't think that's particularly exciting. And the Star Parodia or however it's pronounced is like Star Soldier but done like Parodius or El Parodius, with Bomberman and all sorts of Hudson characters in it. So nothing particularly shocking. But yeah, it was nice to have the import games, which I think leaves you with the only ones left from that set of games that we got that you don't have is Gradius 2, which I have,
and Choaniki,
yeah,
which we'll never get
in more ways than one.
I've heard, I have not played it, but I've heard that Star Parodier is actually really good, and
I've heard good things about
again,
it.
It's it's a shoot 'em up, which we hardly need another one. Yeah. But apparently this one's really good.
Just last week we were saying, man, I miss those days. And we got them.
There you go.
Yep.
Your nostalgia has been
the golden age
paid
is back.
There you go.
Yeah, it's essentially a very cartoony Bomberman starring shooter. Hmm. With as it says, quote, upbeat CD music.
Well, it's a Star Soldier game.
Yeah, it is
funny graphics.
Game, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So I guess we should note that there's still no sign of the three games that were supposed to come out last week: Mega Man, EaseBook 1 and 2, and Samurai Showdown 2.
Well, we still so there is sign of Samurai Showdown 2 if you go by the Wii collection that's already out.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll break in. What's that game like? Because I have no idea.
It's a pool game?
I haven't heard anything particularly remarkable about it for a 2D pool game. I don't think it's especially exciting.
Oh, God, a pool game? Are you serious?
Yeah. It's billiards, yes.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
No, like I said, it's got some pedigree with the developers of Alien Crush behind it, but I don't think it's particularly celebrated or anything.
Yeah. If it was Alien Pool... Maybe.
With shooting?
That might...
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I think... the less said about that, the better.
Yeah, I love these weeks of mystery. I call these the weeks of mystery because you have no idea what games are going to come out on VC and you just don't... When they do come out, you're like, wow, who asked for these? Where did these come from?
What are these?
You know?
Yeah, apparently some people were asking for Star Parodier, so they should be happy. I am told that this is at least an average week, and therefore it is relatively amazing compared to what we've had.
I think
if you want to lower your standards, then I guess this is good stuff.
See, I'm kind of surprised that we got much of anything this week. I thought for sure that, given what they've been doing in the last few weeks, they would certainly stand aside and let, you know, a WiiWare title of relative renown have its day.
Mm-hmm. And by itself?
Well, not by itself, but I mean, put out, like, crap. Just crap that no one would care about.
Very separate markets, though, that they're appealing to.
Still,
aren't they?
Yeah, I mean,
it's sufficiently differentiated for it to be of no real concern, I think.
There have been weeks where, you know, it's clear they were just standing aside for a WiiWare game coming out. And they'd put out
You rationalize it that way.
It's really just they don't care.
That's your interpretation, but you don't really know that that's why they had all those bad weeks. There could be totally different.
It could
reasons.
Just be there.
Samurai Showdown 2 has shown up in Europe, so I'm guessing it can't be that far behind.
has the collection disc shown up in Europe, though?
I don't know. I'm not sure about the release. I have no idea. I've not monitored when it's coming out in Europe.
I've heard that as much as we say that these collection discs, the SNK and then also the Samurai Showdown collection, are like much better values than buying all the games on Virtual Console, I've heard that the PS2 versions of these collections are actually like $30, whereas the Wii versions are $40 or $50.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Probably. We're not getting the best deal possible.
No,
that's
but you're
sure.
not getting the worst either.
True, yeah. But I mean, obviously, if you have a PS2 that you still play and you want these games, you might want to consider those versions because they're probably exactly the same.
Maybe you have a better D-pad or something if you're playing with the classic controller, maybe?
Oh, definitely.
The classic does have a good one.
But I mean,
if you've got an arcade
stick or something, then you might, for the PS2, I guess you could go that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you had, you know, if you're like a Soul Calibur 3 fan or something on PS4, a Tekken 4 fan or something, then you might actually have a good arcade stick.
I've also heard that of these SNK compilation games, they're pretty stripped down in terms of content. I mean, you're pretty much just getting the games with a front end, so you're not really missing anything if you buy them on PS2 versus the Wii.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're not even getting that on the Wii Sports titles, though. You're just getting the game.
Yep.
And you're usually getting...
But at least, you know, to be fair, with the Virtual Console system, at least you can pick and choose and only download them.
If you only want
a couple of these, you might end up spending less money
definitely.
If
you only want Samurai Showdown 2, well then, by all means, go ahead and get it on WiiWare. But if you have interest in any other games that they've made, essentially, at all, that are on that compilation, you'll probably break even getting the disc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well... Enough discussion of that. Our show is over now, and thanks for listening, and we look forward to your listener mail. Please send that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and otherwise, we will we'll be back next week.
Later.
Later.
So bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, you have to say
James.
Something incredibly obscene right now to force it.
Fuck!
That's not going to get me edited out,
fucking
dude.
Fucking cunt.